This is Your Life, episode number 14.
This is your life. Are you who you wanna be?
Hello and welcome to another episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, we'll be continuing our discussion of platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World. Last week, as you may know, was the official launch week of the book. Things honestly could have not gone better. I'll discuss that in a few moments and also answer several questions from my listeners. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE Launch and Platform Conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. You can find more information at dynamiccommunicators.com. Well, as I said, we launched my new book, Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World, last week. Wow, what a week. On Monday morning, I told my team, I said, you know, if we can get this book into Amazon's top 1,000, that'll be huge. I mean, that was my expectation. If we could just do that, that would provide a great foundation for, you know, the distribution, for the media interviews, for the blog coverage and all that that would happen in the week. But by 8:30 that morning, it was already at 160 on Amazon, 160 on Amazon, which is pretty amazing given the fact that they have 27 million titles literally in their database of books for sale. But by 10:15 in the morning, it had already moved to number 16. And a few hours later, to my surprise, it hit number 6. And then a little after 5 p.m., it hit number 4. So it stayed number 4, number 5, or number 6 all week. Man, I was blown away by that. We had a ton of people helping promote it. I certainly could not have done this on my own. But some of the biggest bloggers were behind it. And you can find a complete list of them at michaelhyatt.com/reviews. But probably the highlight for me was being on Dave Ramsey's show. Dave is a good friend. I've known him for almost 2 decades. And I mean, he promoted the living daylights out of this, so much so that one of the guys on his team called me the next day after the radio show aired and asked me if I had any copies of the book because the publisher was out. And this was one of the biggest book promotions they'd ever done. I think they sold like 800 copies, but it was amazing. A great highlight for me. Well, I pretty much shut down my participation in the promotion on Wednesday evening because I had an even bigger launch this past weekend, which was the marriage of my daughter, Madeline, to Sean Lemon. And so we had to get ready on Thursday. We continued to prep on Friday. And then, of course, we had the rehearsal dinner on Friday evening and then getting ready last minute stuff on Saturday and then the wedding that evening. Man, I was so proud, so touched. This was not the first time I've done this. I have 5 daughters, and this was the 4th wedding, so the 4th time I've made the trip down the aisle, but I still teared up and was just moved to see the beauty of my daughter and to really be able to give her to a man that I've come to respect and deeply appreciate and really love. Sean's just a great kid, and so I'm thrilled with that. So that was pretty much my weekend. I didn't spend a lot of time other than occasionally checking how it was doing on Amazon, but it was a great week. And I'm grateful to you. If you bought a copy of the book, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you tweeted or Facebooked or posted a status update on LinkedIn about the book or Pinterest or Google+, thank you for that as well. And I hope you'll continue to support the book. I don't think it's begun to reach its full potential yet. And I'm getting tremendous response from my readers, and I'm deeply grateful for that. It's not something I take for granted. Well, in this episode, I want to really focus on taking questions from my listeners about platform. We only got through a smattering of questions. Smattering, is that a word? We got through a smattering of questions last week. I think about 6 or 7 of them. And I had a ton of questions come in. So in this particular episode, I want to get through as many platform questions as I can. And so I'm just going to take them in order, and I'm going to jump right in with the first one from Sarah Ferry.
Hi, Michael. My name is Sarah Ferry. I'm the owner of Discover Massage in Fort Collins, Colorado. Our website is discovermassage.org. Calling regarding your latest podcast talking about platform. Wondering what the best way to get employees excited about our platform is.
Well, I would suggest a couple things, Sarah. First of all, I would get them involved in creating the content if you possibly can. And I did take a look at your website, which is great. But, you know, you've got some demonstration videos there. I'd get them involved in making videos if they can, or writing blog posts, or sharing their expertise, because if you do that, they'll have more ownership in the platform itself. I would also encourage them to get on Twitter and Facebook, and not just to do promotion of your platform or of your blog site, but to really develop their expertise and let that be linked with your platform. Because don't forget, in today's world, people connect with people, not institutions, not organizations, not even businesses. They want to know the people that are behind it and connect to them. So I would just encourage your people to do that. And even on company time, obviously, you might want to talk about some guidelines with them. I don't really believe in social media rules. I just think, you know, get people that have good judgment and let them express themselves as they would in any form of communication. But just talk about the business, talk about their own interests, and connect with people personally. The next question comes from my friend, Philip Rothschild.
Hi, Mike. This is Philip Rothschild, and I'm Jennifer Rothschild's husband and her chief platform builder. Jennifer's blog can be found at jenniferrothschild.com. Mike, we're redesigning Jennifer's home base. You write about it in platform. And my designer thinks the landing page should be a visually appealing photo slider with tabs that point to her blog, speaking, store, etc. But I think the landing page should be her blog to enhance immediate engagement and then point to everything else. Should a bias for engagement trump a bias for design when it comes to building your platform?
Philip, this is a great question. And I come down on your side of it because I do not believe that design should triumph either engagement or content. It should serve both of those. I think of design like the drummer in a band. You know, when it's really good, you don't notice it, but if it was gone, you would miss it. And I think that's how design should be. It should never be so loud or so noticeable that you just go, wow, great design. And that's what you're immediately focused on. You want people to engage with you as a brand, or in your case, with Jennifer, and you want them to really be focused on your content. So you can't do that if the design is overpowering. And I think that when you come to a page like what you're talking about, it, for most people, represents at least another click or two to get to the changing content of the blog. And that's what's going to get people coming back time and time again, is the fact that the blog is changing and you're offering up new value, new content, new inspiration to Jennifer's audience. So I would totally not let the designer dictate this. I would have people come directly to the blog. Next question comes from Heidi Kreider.
Hi, Michael. This is Heidi Kreider calling. I'm an author and blogger at HeidiKreider.com. My question for you on your upcoming show is, I don't have a lot of money to spend on a platform. What are some ways that I can develop a platform without a huge expense?
Great question. I get this a lot, Heidi. But I would say, first of all, it doesn't cost you a lot to get started. If you go to like WordPress.com and start there, when you start getting some altitude in your platform, you start getting some momentum, which is probably a better way to look at it, then you may want to start investing. But I never let my investment get too far ahead of the return on the investment. So I did go to eventually go to self-hosted WordPress, and I invested in design and all of that, but not at the beginning. I started at TypePad, and then I went to a very simple design with a theme that I was able to buy for about $70. And then I got, you know, fancier as time went on, but I didn't start there, and you don't need to start there either. So I would go to WordPress.com, which is WordPress's what's called their hosted solution. In other words, it's not going to be running on your server. Doesn't have to be complex. You literally can sign up and get started in 5 minutes. Pick one of their designs. The most important thing is to get content, to begin writing, and to start getting some momentum in your writing and find your voice. But I wouldn't get hung up on the design or spending a lot of money. Also, Twitter and Facebook. I mean, what do they cost? You know, maybe you need to have a good photo of yourself. Other than that, I wouldn't invest too much more at the beginning. The next question comes from Jeremy Myers. Take it away, Jeremy.
Hello, Michael. This is Jeremy Myers from tillhecomes.org. I'm wondering if you have any advice for those of us who want to develop our platform, but we have jobs where we cannot, of course, access Facebook and Twitter and many other sites on the website, and it wouldn't be fair to our employer anyway. Then at home, we have marriage and family and kids and all of that to take care of. Any tips for developing your platform in a busy life?
Jeremy, in my experience, what gets scheduled gets done. And so put it on your calendar. I don't think it has to take an enormous amount of time. I spend about 30 minutes a day on Twitter, and I talk about that in the book platform, about how to be really efficient and how to become a Twitter ninja in 30 minutes a day or less. In terms of blogging, that may take a little bit longer. I wrote for years just doing, you know, two or three posts a week, and those would typically take me anywhere from 60 to 70 minutes per post. And you do get better and faster over time. So I would just encourage you to schedule that. I used to write late at night because that was the only time I had. I was a very busy CEO, and my company had my the first of my time, and my family also had my time. So this had to come in third place. And so I would just, again, encourage you to schedule it and work from there and make sure that you're disciplined in it. Next question from J.D. Smith.
Michael Hyatt, this is J.D. Smith in Charlotte, North Carolina at cityimpact.org. Michael, what are the best three ways to separate and yet keep intersected the platforms of a business or ministry and the founders of that business or ministry as things multiply and grow forward? Thanks, and look forward to hearing your answer. God bless.
JD, I don't know if I can come up with three ways, but I would say this, and it's kind of back to the question that I think Sarah asked earlier, and that is people connect with people. They don't connect with organizations. They don't connect with businesses primarily. You just look back when I was the CEO of Thomas Nelson, and I had probably 10 times the number of Twitter followers as the Thomas Nelson Twitter account did. And again, for the very same reason, when you follow a business on Twitter or on Facebook, you expect them to be promoting to you. And if you're interested in the product, great, but you can only handle so much of that. Again, you're going to be so much more connected to the individuals. So I would encourage the founders, the CEOs, the leadership of the company or the ministry or the organization to Twitter under their own names, to do Facebook under their own names, you know, do it as an organization too, but try to get as many links, I guess, or tentacles out there into the marketplace to try to bring people into your business. It's all good. You know, the benefit of the company will accrue to the individuals. And conversely, the brand equity in the individuals will accrue to the company. So I do not make a hard, fast line between those two. Everybody is an ambassador for the company or the organization, and the organization ought to be serving the individuals into it. So I think if you'll just let it flow organically, it'll all be good. Next question from Tom Schulte.
Hi, Michael. This is Tom Schulte calling from Atlanta, Georgia with the Link to Leadership Group. I have a popular group on LinkedIn with 22,000 members called Link to Leadership and a blog also at linktoleadership.com that gets about 25,000 page views per month. My question is, how do I move this group from an embassy site, which is LinkedIn, over to a home-based or self-hosted community? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Well, first of all, Tom, good for you to be able to recognize the difference between a home base and an embassy. There really is a difference. And for those of you who haven't read the book, obviously Tom has, let me just articulate those quickly or the differences. A home base is a place in cyberspace that you own and control. That's the key thing. You have total control over the messaging. You have total control over the branding. And this is your home base. It's the place that you refer everyone else to. It could be a podcast. It could be a blog. It could be a website. It could be a video site. But again, the emphasis is on ownership and control. In my case, michaelhyatt.com is my home base. I get involved in these embassies out there like Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Pinterest, all the other social networking sites. But I use those as a way to go to where the people are, to engage them there, and then to refer them back to my home base. Because I really don't know if those embassies, again, a place where you need credentials and you have a presence, but you don't own, you never know how long those are going to be around or if they're going to change or if you're going to continue to be able to find your best customers and your fans there. So again, I see them as embassies. Well, what happens in the case of Tom where you've built essentially a home base in what is an embassy site, a place that you don't control or don't own? I think my recommendation, Tom, would be to go ahead and build out your home base on self-hosted WordPress. I mean, you use that term, so I assume you know what that is. But for the rest of you that don't, first of all, don't get hung up on it. It basically means where you install WordPress on a server that you're either leasing or renting or controlling and have your presence there. But the thing I would say, Tom, is go ahead and establish your home base there. I think I would duplicate the content for a while, at least on LinkedIn, but constantly refer people back to your home base. Tell them you're moving things there, that you'll continue to have a presence on LinkedIn, but you're going to move it to your own site where you have more control over the content and you're able to add some additional features that will benefit the people that follow you. And that's how I would always couch it, how I would always position it or present it to the people that are part of your group. And that is, you're doing it for them, not just for yourself, but this is going to be a better experience for them. And I would give it some time. I would probably duplicate the content for a while before I would move exclusively over to your own site, because you're going to lose some people if you just move it abruptly. The next question comes from Wanda Ball.
Hi, Michael. My name is Wanda Ball, and I am from Chino, California. I am the author and publisher of BallPublications.com. I currently speak at my local church, and I have now decided to become a public speaker. I want to broaden my platform. So I wanted to know, how do I actually market myself to a broader audience? Thank you.
One of the first thing I would suggest is you've got to get a speaker's page on your blog or on your website. And the person that you need to be thinking about as you're developing that speaker's page is the event planner, because people who are shopping for speakers are looking for specific things. They want, for example, they want to see what other people are saying about your speaking. So begin getting endorsements from the events where you've spoken. And those may be sparse initially, but go ahead and get them anyway. And then a standard operating procedure, always get them immediately after you speak for an event planner. I would also put a video of you speaking on there. That's probably the most important thing that event planners look for, is they want to see you in action. They want to know, you know, can you deliver the bacon when you're in front of an audience? So that's key as well. A list of your topics. What are your two or three top topics, the most requested topics that are people looking, that people are looking for? And then your schedule of speaking events. And I have a list of these in the book platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World, all the elements that make up for a dynamic speaking page, and I would encourage you to replicate that. Then what I would do is try to get that landing page, the link to that landing page, out in your social media networks. You can't overdo it. In other words, I should say you can overdo it. Don't do it too much. Don't be so promotional that you're just constantly spamming your followers, you know, pushing your own speaking. I do it occasionally, but not that often. If you start delivering quality content, or if you are delivering quality content via your blog or podcasting or video or some other mechanism, you're going to create demand. People are going to want more of you. They're going to want to hear you speak, and it will develop organically. But start by creating a place, a home for your speaking, where people can go and get information. Until you have a landing page, essentially you're not in business as a speaker. So I would start there. Next question comes from Joshua Bedford.
Hey, Michael. My name is Joshua Bedford, and I'm from Mississippi. My website and blog can be found at joshuabedford.com. In your section on Twitter, you advise to automate our delivery of tweets. This probably depends on the number of tweets, but how long do you suggest we space them apart?
Joshua, I think that's a highly individual question, and you're probably going to just have to experiment to find the right rhythm, the right frequency, the right volume of tweets. It's very much different on Twitter than it is on Facebook. I found on Facebook that I can do about 2 status updates a day, and that's about all anybody wants to hear from me. I mean, it's just a environment or a culture on Facebook that is not conducive to multiple updates per day. Now, some people misuse Facebook, and I think they suffer the consequences of that. And I did that initially, too. In fact, I was initially just feeding my tweets into Facebook, but it overwhelmed the people who are trying to follow me on Facebook, and I didn't get much traction there till I changed my strategy. I would say, though, that on Twitter, and that's the question you ask about, on Twitter, this is for me, and this is what I found over time, but I do about 13 to 15 updates per day. Now, I space those out using Buffer. It's a little application that enables me to load the tweets on the front end, and I do this in about 30 minutes at the beginning of the day as I'm going through my RSS feeds, as I'm going through email newsletters that I get, as I'm searching other web content. I find links that I think are going to be interesting and useful to my followers, and I post a status update for Twitter in Buffer, and then Buffer spreads them throughout the day. And I try to do these about 1 an hour. And I avoid times like, you know, at the end of the day between about 5 and 7, typically when people are in a commute and not paying attention. But again, for me, it works about once per hour. Again, if it's more than that, I get some fall off because people just say it's just too much. If it's less than that, you know, people want more and I hear from them. But I've just, you know, figured this out over time. So again, for me, it's about once an hour. Your mileage may vary. Next question comes from Paul Evans.
Hi, Michael. Paul Evans calling from Montgomery, Alabama. My website is paulbevans.com. How bold do you need to be when you're wanting to expand your platform? You're really wanting people to take your message, to share it, to tell others about it, tweet about it, comment, etc. How bold can you actually be? I've noticed that some people don't always take the initiative. So what are some suggestions you have to encourage other people to share your message for you?
Well, I don't guess I really believe in asking directly too much. In other words, I would never, you know, DM somebody on Twitter or Facebook them or send them an email and say, hey, you know, can you spread this message? I mean, it's very rare for me to do that. I shouldn't say I wouldn't ever do it or I haven't ever done it, because I have, but it's very rare. I think you can really wear out people and put them in an awkward position. If your content is great, they're going to want to share it. You're not going to have to talk them into it or beg for it. I can tell you the people that ask me to retweet stuff on Twitter, I almost never retweet it. I think to myself, if you have to ask me, you're not creating wow content to begin with. And again, that's not a hard, fast rule. But I usually think if somebody's asking, you know, there's something up there that makes me suspicious. Now, having said that, I would have a clear mechanism on my blog that enables people to share the content if they find it engaging. So to have social media buttons or some other way to share it on Facebook, a like button or a Twitter button. Man, if you go to my website at michaelhyatt.com, you will find those things front and center. Well, actually top and center. But with every blog post, there is a mechanism for sharing it. And people use those like crazy. And it's one of the reasons I get so much engagement. The social proof at the top that talks about how many comments, how many, you know, Facebook shares, how many tweets. Those are all important for creating authority for the post or social validation for the post. But it also creates a mechanism for them to share it with their followers, which is the key to amplification and creating traffic. Next question comes from Rebecca Livermore.
Hi, Michael. This is Rebecca Livermore from ProfessionalContentCreation.com. And the question that I have for you is, what is the best way for people who are introverts, who maybe don't like getting up in front of people speaking or going to live events and networking, to build a platform? Thanks so much.
Rebecca, there's a lot that I could share about this. Let me just say to begin with that I am an introvert myself. I am very introverted. I'm naturally shy in a group of people. I kind of keep to myself. I don't draw energy from people. But over time, I've learned to kind of, you know, turn it on, hopefully in a genuine and authentic way. But the way I do that is I make it about the other person. I try to be really naturally inquisitive so that if I'm in a room of people trying to network, I'm not there self-promoting. I don't do that very well. But I love to ask questions and find out more about other people. And as it turns out, other people's favorite topic, their favorite subject to talk about is, guess what? Themselves. That's right. So I think if you make it about that, it will help you to focus less on yourself, more about them, and put you at ease. Having said that, I do think that you're going to have to put yourself out there. You know, if you're going to build a platform, you're going to have to move outside of your current comfort zone. And the thing that I would say there is that the solution to your current problem, and I've said this in many contexts, is outside of your comfort zone. That's where growth occurs. You have to be willing to move outside of your comfort zone if you're going to grow. If you're not willing to do that, you're not going to grow a platform. And frankly, you're probably not going to accomplish a whole lot. So you got to be willing to be brave, to be courageous, and to step out a little bit in order to build a platform. Next question comes from Jane Graham.
Hi, Michael. My name is Jane Graham. I'm calling from West Michigan, and I blog about faith at girlmeetspaper.com. I'm just wondering if you can offer some insight to this little dilemma. You talked about in your last podcast how it's the people who stick with it who will kind of overcome that pinnacle and see their blog take off. And if you just hang in there and persevere, that perhaps you're on the brink of something big and you don't even know it, and if you give up and walk away, you'd lose that great experience. At the same time, I've heard other bloggers who are really successful and who I respect talk about how they had to make the tough decision to scrap an old blog and start over, and how they've finally gained the traction that they had been looking for in doing so. So I'm just wondering, how do you know if you're on the wrong track? How do you know if your message is just boring or you're just a bad writer, or when it's just a growth issue and it just takes time? So I'm having trouble discerning between the two, and I'd love your thoughts. Thanks so much.
Jane, that's a great question, and I would encourage you to read Seth Godin's book, The Dip, where he answers that. It's a very short book. You can read through it, but he answers the question, you know, when do you know to give up and, you know, go to something else or persevere through the dip and see the upside on the other side? So that's a great book to start with. I would say, just because I say to stick with it and persevere doesn't mean that you have to beat a dead horse or stay with the same concept. You can switch that. When I started blogging in 2004, my blog was called Working Smart, and I blogged almost exclusively on productivity. But after a while, I started running out of things to say, and it just didn't interest me. It didn't fire up my imagination, and I wanted to move on to something else. So I started, I kind of redesigned the blog. I renamed it, still under michaelhyatt.com, but I called it From Where I Sit. And my intention was to blog as a new CEO and to blog as a publishing executive, and kind of pull the curtain apart and let people see into the mysterious world of publishing. But after a while, that also kind of ran its course, and I started to see a decrease in my traffic. And so I kind of reinvented myself for the third time. And then I decided I was going to just write on leadership and social media and still publishing and still productivity, but I was going to broaden it a little bit. My point is that just because I was committed to persevering and succeeding didn't mean I was committed to running a concept that had sort of, you know, it had outlasted its life. I think you've got to be discerning about that. And one of the things I look for is comments, not volume, but the quality of comments. What are people telling me? Are they finding my content helpful? Is it adding value? If I'm not getting any of that, then I probably would seriously question about whether I'm on the right track or not. So hope that's helpful. Next question is from Casey Cup.
Hi, Michael. My name is Casey Cup, and I'm calling from Rock Island, Illinois. I blog at kccup.com. My question today is, what is a good balance for promoting your blog or product so you don't come across as narcissistic and self-absorbed? You do a wonderful job with this, so I'm definitely looking forward to hearing your wisdom in this area. Thanks, Michael. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Casey. I would say that generosity should be your guide. I've got a whole chapter on this in the book Platform. It's called the 20 to 1 rule. And it's all about the number of deposits that you make versus the withdrawals you make from your audience. And I don't know if the ratio is exactly right, but you've got to make a lot more deposits. You've got to add a lot of value before you start extracting value. So again, I try about 1 out of 20 posts. This week, last week has been a little crazy because I was promoting my book, but normally I'm really trying to add value and make sure that I'm pointing people to other resources and things that are going to help them, as opposed to pointing them to my resources and kind of, you know, tooting my own horn. So I hope that'll be helpful. And I would read that chapter in the book. I think it will help it help you further. Next question is from Tammy Helfrich.
Hi, Michael. It's Tammy Helfrich. I blog at tammyhelfrich.wordpress.com. My question is, when do you think is the optimum time to start putting advertising on your blog? What do you think that most advertisers would look for before even considering paying to be a part of your blog? Thanks so much.
I think you need about 10,000 unique visitors a month before it starts making sense for advertisers to go to the hassle of signing up to run advertising on your blog. Now, you can use Google AdWords and some other networks with less volume than that, but I just wonder if it's really worth it. I waited till I had about 20,000 plus unique visitors a month before I started monetizing my blog through advertising. And your mileage may vary on that as well. You know, you can be experimental on it and just see. But the thing you don't want to do is launch an advertising offering to the marketplace and then have nobody sign up and you've got all these blank spots on your blog. So I would start with fewer spots, advertising spots, and I would do what I could to make those sell out initially. And I'll tell you, when I started, and I don't even think I talk about this in the book, but when I started, I gave away those spots. I contacted some of my friends who had products or services that I thought would have affinity for my audience. And I said, hey, I'm about to start advertising on my site. How about if I just give you a free slot here for a month and just see how it goes and you can kind of tell me about your experience? Well, that kind of created the impression that my spots were in demand and that people were clamoring for them. And then the next month, people started paying for them a little bit at a time, and I started giving those free slots up and letting one slot be available so that I could sell it. But again, I think probably the right level is about 10,000 unique visitors a month before you start to consider it. The last question, we're about out of time, comes from Kelly Combs.
It's Kelly Combs from Virginia at kellycombs.com. Michael, I love in your book Platform that you say, be generous. And if you want to build a social media platform, that you have to be a giver and not a taker. I see you act this out by having guest bloggers and sharing your platform with them and the giveaways you have on your blog. But my question is, if you don't already have a large platform or products to give away, what are some examples of ways we can be generous?
This is also a great question, Kelly. And just the fact that you're asking this question shows that you're headed in the right direction, because generosity is the best marketing strategy that you could ever use. One of the things that I found as I was out kind of foraging in the on the internet looking for resources for my audience of readers is that that was one of the things that I could offer. And it was not only something that I was offering to my readers, but something that I was offering to these other bloggers was exposure to my audience. So I think at the very least, do that. You can also offer links, you know, on your blog to other bloggers so that, you know, they get some exposure and some backlinks there. I think also commenting on other blogs is a great way to create engagement on those blogs. And again, to give you backlinks. So any way you can be generous, any way you can give to others is a great way for you to succeed and to gain some credibility with those other bloggers, which eventually, if you're going to build a platform, if you've got something you're going to sell eventually or message you're trying to promote, you're going to need that. And it paid off for me this last week in spades, because for years I've been giving to other bloggers and I've been pointing my resources to other people and trying to help them when they would write a book or whatever. And then it came time for them to do that for me this last week. And oh my gosh, I was just overwhelmed with the generosity of my friends and the people that I'd met on cyberspace. So that's about it. That's about all the time we have for questions. I think that was a record. We got in a number of questions, more than I've ever done before. I hope that was helpful to you. Again, the book is called Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World. Please tell your friends about this book. If you haven't, you can find more details at platformbook.com. Next week, I'm going to be at Blog World and the New Media Expo in New York City. I've got a private event I'm doing on Monday, and then I'll be up at Blog World on Tuesday through Thursday. And I'm going to be speaking at one of the super sessions on Thursday morning, June the 7th at 9 a.m. And I'm going to be speaking on the subject of platform, and especially how I'm applying it to my new podcast and what I've been learning and building a platform in the podcast space, which, oh my gosh, it's been like a whole brand new experience for me. But you can get more information at michaelhyatt.com/blogworld. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. In the next episode, I want to talk about, back to leadership topic, I want to talk about how to create alignment in teams. So if you have a question about this topic, about creating organizational alignment, alignment in your team, you can leave a voicemail for me at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. And if you want to leave a comment on this podcast, you can do so at michaelhyatt.com /014, as in episode 14, michaelhyatt.com/014. I'd also be grateful if you'd rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps me tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. So until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.
This is your life. Are you who you are?